Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettay along with Charlotte Long. Got a full show for you today. We'll start it out with Chessa Boucher, who covers the LSU Tigers. A lot of hats she wears, but nobody knows the LSU women's basketball team better than Chessa. Chessa, thanks so much for joining us here on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Chess, I'll start with the women's basketball first before we get into baseball, because last night was El Stinko. But it's a long season. It's a long year. The one thing, I look at this 2026 LSU women's basketball team, and I know probably that's a better term for it, but they're schizophrenic. You don't know what you're going to get quarter to quarter or game to game from them. I know one thing, that's got to be driving, and nobody knows Coach Mulkey better than you, and we've talked about the situation that you wanted to play for Coach Mulkey and that sort of thing, and so you got to know one another really well. But doesn't it seem to be this is a team that you don't know what you're going to catch from night to night?
Yeah, I would agree 100% with that. I think there's a lot of inconsistency we've seen from this team. It's a super talented team. I think, though, if you get down to the nitty-gritty, you have two returning starters from a year ago of a team that made it to the Elite Eight, ended up losing to UCLA in a very winnable ball game. And so you only have two returning starters. You have a extremely talented freshman class by far. I think the deepest talented roster that Kim Mulkey has ever had. I do think inside they lack a true big dominant presence on the inside, but I think they have made up for it defensively. I think their guard play is one of the best in the country with Jada Richard, with Michaela Williams, who now has played more of the 3-4 role for Kim, especially late in the season. And of course, Flaje Johnson is one of the best guards in the country. But I think Malaysia Fulwiley brings a lot to the table as well as the sixth man off the bench. But they are extremely inconsistent, but I think that's kind of a product of what this team is made of. You have a lot of talented transfers, especially with Malaysia coming off the bench. And then you have Jada Richard, who I think has taken a big step forward in year two in this program and has really come into her own. And I love what I've seen from her. But it's just a team that is, I mean, to start the season, they were putting up a ton of points, but you're not going to be able to score like that in SEC play, even though they've had a 100-point game a few times in the SEC this year. But as we've seen, defense travels, and they've relied heavily on their defense, and they know how to rebound the basketball, and I think it can win them a lot of ball games. Now, how far did they go in the NCAA tournament? That is yet to be determined. I think it's going to be interesting how everything shapes up in Greenville this week at the SEC tournament, but I think if they get a favorable spot, especially in the NCAA tournament, where maybe they're not facing a big-time, big presence inside, that they could make a run and, you know, get to Arizona for the Final Four. Because again, I think this is one of the most talented, it's by far the deepest team Kim has ever had. And I think there's been a balancing act for Kim that maybe she hasn't been accustomed to here in Baton Rouge, of having the starters play and then getting the true freshmen in and getting them playing time. And I think maybe, I would say probably halfway through the season, that Kim is, you know, looking like, do we have enough minutes for the starters? Are they in good shape? You don't want to wear them out, but it's nice to have that depth and come off the bench. But you have to kind of toe that line of, are you getting enough minutes from your starting five in that production, and then trying to get minutes for these younger girls so that they do have experience, especially when they do make this tournament run.
Chessa, one of the things Coach Mulkey has always brought up in, when she comes on with us, is at tournament time, the importance of experience, having been there, done that. You know, and a lot of people bring up about South Carolina not being, okay, how many teams have beat South Carolina over the last couple of years? Okay, you can count that on one hand. You got to give them credit at this point. South Carolina is a better team than basically 99% of the people they play each and every game. But you haven't played college basketball understanding experience when it comes down to if it's tournament time, SEC-wise, or also in the big dance. Kim has always brought that up, that that is a major factor when you look at the champions that have come out of women's basketball.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you can't replace experience. There's nothing that replaces experience. That is the most vital thing that you can have on a roster. And I think that's why when you look at this team, you're like, holy smokes, despite them being the number 7 overall seed, you only have Flaje Johnson. You only have Michaela Williams. And Jada played some minutes, but not meaningful minutes in the postseason. So you're looking at a team that's still pretty young and inexperienced. I think throughout the season, they've gained a lot of experience. I love the way Grace Knox plays. She ain't scared of nobody, and you need somebody like that on your team, especially when you're going up against some of the big names in a South Carolina. She's not going to back down from anybody. I just think this team is so talented, and I think they're really playing their best basketball down the stretch. I think losing to South Carolina kind of put everything in perspective of like, yeah, we're good, but maybe we're not on that level. That's the best game that they've played against South Carolina in a very winnable ball game if they just make their free throws. So it's one of those things of a Kim Mulkey team, they're notoriously known for making their free throws at the end of a ball game. For Flaje to miss three, that's very uncharacteristic of her. I think they make a run at the SEC tournament. We know that Kim doesn't have a lot of stake in the SEC tournament because it's just setting you up for the NCAA tournament. They're already projected as a number 2 seed. They would have to win out in order to even remotely get into that conversation for the number 1 seed. Right now, they're projected to be a 2 seed, and of course, paired up with the number 1 overall seed with UConn in the Fort Worth Region 1. So that could be interesting how everything shakes up. But yeah, I think experience is everything, and I think this team has earned some playing or minutes in this playing time from this freshman class that are really going to pay dividends as they go on this championship run.
Chessa, you've watched a lot of the women's basketball, Connecticut and South Carolina. Would you say right now, if you had to guess, and depending on kind of which bracket, because they could end up kind of playing one another, those two teams today are the two best women's basketball teams in college basketball?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think South Carolina, you said it, experience. They've been there. They've done that. They aren't the same South Carolina teams that we've seen Dawn Staley produce. And what I mean by that is losing Chloe Kitts to an injury. She's missed all of this season. I think Raven Johnson has done really well, and Tess Johnson shot the lights out against LSU here in Baton Rouge. But it's not a dominant team who's going to blow everybody out of the water. They've found ways to win in different ways, and I think that makes them dangerous, but I also think that they're very beatable. I think UConn has not played a very tough schedule. They're not really battle tested. So I think it could be, of course, playing against the SEC in that competition night in and night out really prepares you for the NCAA tournament. And so I think they're both two very beatable teams, but by far the product that they've put out this year has shown that they are the two best in the country. But again, any given day you get paired up against a team like LSU who gets hot and is playing their best ball at the right time, they could go down. And it would be amazing to see Kim grapple either of those teams and kick them out of the tournament.
Yeah, it's not a series, okay? It's one game. And you can have a bad game, and I'll transition that into baseball, because we saw, over the weekend, LSU's pitching staff was dominant, and William Schmidt has just been terrific out on the mound as a sophomore. Last night was Ugly from the start with LSU pitching, hitting, and then all of a sudden they make a run at it late. But overall, as we're getting close to SEC play and you've gotten a chance to watch this LSU team, how would you look at it throughout the years with Jay Johnson, kind of rank them this early in the season? Because the team you see today, that's not what you're going to see in May. It's going to be different. Either you're going to be better or you're going to be worse. There is no stay the same in sports. And so your thoughts on this 2026 LSU baseball team?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a product of, again, going back to the transfer portal. You basically lose every starter in the infield except for Steven Milam at shortstop, and that's a big hit in the infield. And so you're trying to replace people like Jared Jones at first base, even Daniel Dickinson at second, you know, Michael Braswell, who went from short to third and played amazing defense, one of the best fielding percentages in the history of LSU baseball program. That speaks volumes. I thought to start the season, especially they had the most talented outfield returning with Jake Brown and Wright, with Derek Curiel at center field, moving from left to center field, his natural position. And then you had Chris Stanfield in left field. Chris Stanfield goes out. He's hurt with a hand injury. He led the national championship team last year in hits. He's been out this past weekend. You are trying to replace, you know, that catching spot. And you have Cade Arrambeady, who is not the best defender, but he's had a hot bat. He gets hurt against McNeese, so he's battling back from an injury, and you don't have a ton of depth at that catching position. So I think you're seeing kind of not only the injuries impact this game, but also a young group of guys who are still trying to figure it out and trying to build that chemistry. I don't think this lineup's going to stay the same, like you said, from now until the end of May. I think it's going to look a lot different in the postseason. What I can say is that I've been impressed with the starting pitchers. They've been phenomenal. I know that Cason Evans, his opening night, that Friday night, was not great, but he's really bounced back and had back-to-back performances where you're like, okay, he's really settling into his own. I think Cooper Moore has been phenomenal. He does not walk a ton of batters. I think he only has one walk in his three appearances, so that's been impressive. And like you said, William Schmidt, coming off of a career high outing this past Sunday, he didn't walk anybody, had nine strikeouts, and he was still kind of the best word. He was like pissed off after that outing. He was like, yeah, it was okay, it wasn't my best. And we're like, bruh, no, this is your best in the purple and gold, you should be happy. And he wasn't, and that just shows you what he expects from himself and what he wants to be, and especially wearing those three letters across his chest. So I think that's really encouraging. But again, I think it falls under the bats have gotten cold, and I feel like Jay Johnson has always been he always puts in the hot bats into the lineup, and so he's trying to tinker with this lineup, figuring out who needs to go where. I think Seth Dardar started off really well in opening weekend. He struggled at second base. But I think when you look back at last night's ball game, that game, they came out flat. They came out uninspired. They played their worst baseball. And then you put in basically the starters are all on the bench, and the guys that came in relief played really well and tried to pull off a comeback. So I think you have talent there. But again, it's building that chemistry, getting comfortable, and you can't commit four errors. If you commit four errors in any ball game, you're not going to win. I think that's kind of been the culprit for this team. The bats have cooled off. I think the bats need to get going again. But again, Chris Stanfield, he more than likely led off for a majority of the season, him and Derek Curiel last year. Derek Curiel hasn't looked like himself all season. I haven't seen him strike out in the way that he is struck out this season. It's almost like he's pressing or trying too hard, rather being more comfortable and taking more pro-like ABs. And so to me, I just think that once you get DC back into his groove, once you get Chris Stanfield back, I think this lineup's going to look a little bit different. And I think Jay's just got to try to figure out who needs to go where at this time and get them out of this slump.
You know, Chessa, the midweek games, you heard Jay Johnson talking about it last night, that he's not used to losing these midweek matchups, whether it be against in-state opponents like McNeese or either other opponents like Northeastern. And when he was talking about, you know, just the rough starts that this LSU baseball team has been on in both of their losses, with on the mound especially, with Marcus Paz, who kind of ran into some issues in his second inning of his first LSU collegiate start against McNeese, where McNeese jumps out to a big lead, basically based off of all the free passes, walks, hit by pitch, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in a hole. And then last night, LSU digs a 10-0 hole on the mound, mostly with a lot of defensive issues, just like you mentioned. It wasn't all Cooper Williams' fault, who got the start in that game. Defensive issues played a part in it. But even then, it feels like LSU's looking for someone to give them reliable outs in the midweek right now. What we've seen from the weekend rotation, Jay talked about it, that they have immense potential, and that potential was realized with Cooper Moore and Kaysen Evans and William Schmidt, who've all been fantastic. I think you've got something there. But as far as these midweek games, they're looking for someone to really step up on the mound. I just want to get your thoughts on who you expect that to potentially be moving forward with another game coming up tomorrow against UL.
Yeah, I really thought Cooper Williams was going to be that guy this year. He played some big-time roles last year, but it was one of those things of, so Cooper Williams goes out last night, had a great first inning, and then struggled. Then you bring in Zach Cowan. Now, Zach Cowan was one of the best four arms on that national championship team last year, just a year ago, and he has struggled out of the gate. Probably one of the worst starts that you could have asked for him. In just four appearances, his ERA right now is 13.5. with 12 hits given up in just four innings of work, in just four appearances. Like, that's not going to cut it. That is not the guy who had the year that he had last year. He just hasn't looked himself. And I really thought that maybe because he had struggles in the back end last year, that this year he was really going to kind of come into his own and show us what we should expect from him and what we saw from him to start the season last year. And he just hasn't been the same. And that's disappointing, because we all love sports, because we all love a great comeback story. Now, hopefully I say this and Zach Cowan goes out and makes me eat my words in 2 weeks, and then I'm happy as can be. But I just think, like you said, they don't have that true starter for the midweek games to go in there and eat up a bunch of innings. You don't want to have to use a lot of arms in order to get to your weekend series. And so to me, I'm like, you just got to find somebody like Cooper. I can't think of his first name. Coop, who they use for the national championship run. Yes, Riley Cooper. That man ate up some innings. His arm was like made of rubber. He could come in and throw five innings or two innings or whatever you needed in high leverage situations and just eat up innings. And it was one of those arms of like, you need a guy like that. I just don't think they've found that guy yet who is going to be the guy that Jay goes to on these midweek games. And it's crazy to think about, just because last year, William Schmidt was that guy. And then the year before that, it was Cade Anderson, who was the starter on the midweek games, who earned the starting rotation the next year. And then look at him being a top three draft pick. So I think there's still a lot to be learned from this pitching staff. I love the starting rotation. I love what we've seen in relief, especially from Gavin Guidry. But you got to find one or two reliable guys that you can go to in a midweek to eat up some innings so that you're not using so many arms and you don't have any consistency.
Jess, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always enjoy when you come on. Great insights. Always do a super job. We'll get you on about LSU spring football, and I think that conversation will be real short. Because if they thought Coach O didn't let nobody watch anything during the spring drills, from everybody I've spoke to who covered Ole Miss, they were, you get a glance and that's it. He shuts that door and you don't see nothing. So that conversation will last probably about 2 or 3 minutes about Coach Kiffin and LSU's spring work.
I'll tell you about all that strong, all the stretches they do, how well they stretch for spring practice. That's about it.
Jess, again, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, Jess.
Right. Jessa Boucher does a great job. She's really one of the rising young stars as a reporter in our area.